Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Special guest today, we're talking NBA draft. I've got Gary Parrish from CBS Sports and the GP Show, 92.9 FM in Memphis. Gary, how's it going?
I'm okay, man. You doing all right?
I'm doing all right. I'm getting by with as little work as possible. That's always my goal is to get by with doing as little as possible.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations on that. I'm in the opposite right now, in the middle of this college basketball season. A lot of travel and a newborn child, and so I'm way behind on sleep and way up on flu-like symptoms.
Well, congratulations. Well, I guess the travel's also cool to congratulate you on, but congratulations on the child.
Yes. You know what? When you have a newborn child, the travel is actually something to be congratulated on. I miss my family. Let me be very, very clear.
Absolutely.
I miss my wife. I miss my children. But there was something really nice about checking into the hotel here in New York and realizing that a two-week-old baby was not going to wake me up at any point throughout the night. So my wife is a bit jealous, but I'm anxious to get back home as well.
I've heard that from friends I've had where a lot of my friends now have children, and they will get away for a night. I'm like, oh, man, is it hard being away from the little one? They're like, hey, I love my kid. Love him to death. Would do anything for him. These 4 hours are bliss right now.
No, it's so interesting. Newborn, like we have a 10-year-old, and now we have a newborn, right? So we're averaging like a kid a decade.
Sure.
And so, people always. I'm a little more comfortable with it now. I'm 36. So when my first child was born, our first child was born, I was 26, and I didn't really know how to act. People would always be like, "Oh, don't you love spending time with your baby? Don't you love being around your baby?" And you sort of nod and you go, "Oh yeah, it's great." And the truth is, it is great. Like looking at him and seeing him and recognizing everything's perfect. But the truth is, they don't do much. You can't talk to them. You can't play Xbox with them.
Right.
You can't watch TV with them. They don't do anything. And so, people would be like, "Oh, do you want to? So what's your little boy up to today?" Same thing he was doing yesterday. Like he doesn't do anything. He just lays there, waits for his mother to feed him.
Right.
And so. Yeah, I guess I'll echo what your friend told you. I love my child. I love my children, both of them. And my 10-year-old you actually can't hang out with, so that's a little different. But bottom line, any new parent will tell you, it is very nice to not be awake every, for us it's been every, hour and a half, for over the first couple of weeks. And that's just, I think that actually has contributed to my lack of perfect health because, when you travel, you work long days, and then you don't sleep well. I think it starts to break you down a little bit. You could probably tell in my voice, I'm broken down a little bit right now.
Little bit, yeah. You sound a little broken down. Hey, speaking of breaking down, let's break down this 2014 draft.
Very nice.
That's a segue. I'm not a professional like you, but I in terms of segues, I am a professional. The 2014 draft was supposed to be top one heavy, and then it's top two heavy, and now I feel like there's four or five guys between Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, maybe Julius Randle, although his stock seems to be dropping a bit, Joel Embiid, and Dante Exum. Like, these five guys now, you probably know who's going number one and number two, but, Embiid's starting to push up there. Exum is such a intriguing prospect because he's a big point guard. Where does this five shake out for you?
I still think it's Andrew Wiggins at the top, and I know he's been, quote, a disappointment, but it's only relative to expectation. People who are disappointed seem only disappointed in that he's not Kevin Durant. And,
right.
I never really expected him to be Kevin Durant. I'll be honest with you. I expected him to be a little more consistent than what he's been, and I wish he had a little more of a killer instinct. But, I live in Memphis, and so I was around Derrick Rose that entire, his entire 1 year. In college basketball. Like, I was around him, practically, every day. And though people remember him winning an MVP in the NBA, and people remember him being great, and people remember that NCAA tournament where he just overwhelmed, Drew Neitzel at Michigan State, and then
right.
Darren Collison at UCLA, and DJ Augustine at Texas, all these other, quote, possible pro point guards. He just, genuinely overwhelmed them. And that's how he ended up, becoming the number one pick. Because before that NCAA tournament started, he might have still forever ended up the number one pick. But there were at least some people talking about Michael Beasley for that
right.
spot.
Absolutely.
But after what Derek did in the NCAA tournament, and then I think after the lottery, fell on Chicago, it was going to be a no-brainer. But my point is, Derrick Rose was not awesome all year long. He was not a first-team All-American. He was not a second-team All-American. I think at best, some services had him as a third-team All-American. Chris Douglas Roberts was actually the first team All-American on that Memphis team. So I guess what I'm saying is I remember spending November, December, January, even early February, maybe late February, going, geez, you know, he's an obvious talent, Derrick Rose, and he's got all this, you know, he's big for his position, he's strong for his position, he's obviously quick, he's a top-shelf athlete, but where's the killer instinct? You know, when will he just take over a game? When will he just, you know, flip that switch? And the answer was in the NCAA tournament, and I actually thought it corresponded pretty well, or maybe was a precursor to what we saw in the NBA, because I don't know if you remember the first time he got the Bulls in the playoffs, which I don't know if it was rookie year or second year, but you know, he was posting crazy numbers, right?
Yeah, right.
He just started taking over games. And it reminded me a little bit of what he did at Memphis. Like when, you know, he was perfectly happy deferring to other people, deferring to older people, but when all the chips were on the table, he flipped a switch. I say all that to say, does Andrew Wiggins have that switch? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure. But I know that I was skeptical of Derrick for the same reasons at one point that I would be skeptical of Andrew Wiggins right now, which is all the physical stuff's there, all the athleticism's there. Does he have that switch to flip where he becomes the killer that you want him to be? Derrick Rose clearly has that switch. You know, if Andrew Wiggins finds it, then I think his ceiling is still higher than everybody else's, although I'm intrigued by the possibility of Joel Embiid and Jabari Parker. To me, it comes down to those three.
Yeah.
Julius Randle, if I'm picking, Julius Randle's getting picked no higher than fourth because I think his ceiling is lower than the other guys. But I'd be willing to listen to arguments on Parker or Embiid.
I love your take on Andrew Wiggins because I think that, you know, people all of a sudden are saying, you know, oh, he's not that good. And it's like, well, no, the skills are certainly there. The skills are there. You know, he could use a better outside jumper, but I think, you know, sure, there's plenty of time to reconstruct that or to tweak it, whatever you need to do, because he actually has a decent shooting motion. And I think every tool you would want from him is there. And it gets to the point where I've become, at least over the last couple of years, I've become much more, sensitive to it. There's something about the human element that I'm just more cognizant of, where I wonder if you bring an 18-year-old, and it's not that big of a change, but he is in a new country. He's playing with guys he's never played with before. He's, you know, 18-year-old kid trying to deal with all the hype and this stuff. For me, it's like, it's okay if he's not LeBron James right now, if he's not Kevin Durant, if he doesn't have that incredible mentality. Things might be moving too fast for him. They might slow down in a month, you know, when the tournaments start coming around. We have championship week and then March Madness. And then he might just destroy everybody. I think that there is that rush to find him as this, like, amazing hype machine that is valid on all levels, and to be prepared for him to be the next big thing in the NBA. And I think part of that pressure is simply that the coming out party for Jabari Parker was spectacular. I mean, he was all of a sudden, it was, oh, well, this guy's the number one pick. He's so much better than Andrew Wiggins. Look at what he's doing. And comparing the two, they're just in very different systems with very different teammates, and they come from very different places. And I think that, yeah, I think that should all factor in.
No, of course. And you know, some of this is a product of the year 2014. It's a product of social media.
Right.
Like, I guess Twitter was around in 2007, 2008. But I don't, you know, it wasn't like it is now, right?
Yeah.
You didn't have an instant reaction to everything. So at that point, the only thing that served as instant analysis of every single thing that happens every single day was probably, you know, message boards or talk radio. And I can tell you, only because I live in Memphis, I was very aware of the, you know, everyday analysis of Derrick Rose.
Right.
And there was a conversation in November, December, maybe it carried on to early January. Now, let me be clear. It was a stupid conversation. But at least it was a conversation. Should Andre Allen, who was basically a 5'7" walk-on, be starting at point guard for Memphis instead of Derrick Rose? Now, and so, I again, it was stupid, right?
Yeah.
It was shot down pretty quickly. But these are the things that people were talking about. And if we'd had Twitter in 2007, 2008, to the extent that we have Twitter now, these are the types of things you would have seen on Twitter. Now, in hindsight, it would have looked stupid. And so I'm really hesitant to, you know, to make these grand judgments on anybody, really, on a game-to-game basis, even though I know that's what Twitter's sort of built for. There are going to be, you know, 2 weeks into the season, maybe not even that long, you know, my buddy Jeff Goodman, who used to work with us, I worked for the ESPN, and he is my friend, like a close friend, one of my best friends. So I, you know, he and I joke all the time, so I'm not like talking badly about a colleague.
Right.
This is a guy who's one of my friends. But he quoted an NBA scout, who, you know, anonymously, who said there is, quote, no shot that Andrew Wiggins goes number one in the draft. Now, that's just dumb. What do you mean, no shot?
That seems...
It's absurd.
It seems a little extreme.
It's a little extreme. It's a lot extreme. And it's a knee-jerk reaction to a bad game here or there. And so, you know, if you want to say, hey, Andrew Wiggins is not a slam dunk to be the number one pick, that's fair. That's always been fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or it could be Jabari Parker or Joel Embiid or even Julius Randle. That's fair. That's always been fair. But to, after, you know, a handful of games, conclude that they're, quote, no shot, somebody built like Andrew Wiggins, somebody with the reputation of Andrew Wiggins, somebody with the athleticism of Andrew Wiggins, somebody who is still, let me be clear, leading Kansas in scoring, you know, a top 15 team in the country in scoring as a freshman who should actually be a high school senior, to say suddenly that there's, quote, no shot he'll be in the number one pick in the draft, it's just silly to me. And so I think a lot of this is, you know, we all get paid to have opinions in real time. And often, if people wanted to document them, they could make us all look silly, right?
Oh, for sure.
I was joking. Keep in mind, let's change sports for a second. This sort of, I don't know, I noticed this during the BCS National Championship game. At halftime of the Florida State-Auburn game, if you'd have gone to Twitter or, you know, any sort of Florida State message board or Auburn message board, you would have seen things, because I saw them, because I went and looked. Jimbo Fisher is completely outclassed. Jimbo Fisher cannot coach with Gus Malzahn. Jameis Winston is a guy that just took advantage of bad opponents in the ACC, but when he meets up with the ACC, he can't get anything done. My God, the ACC is a laughingstock. Do we have to put the champion of that in the BCS title game? Let us learn from this going forward. These were all, like, if you were to timestamp them, they're right there. Literally an hour and a half later, Jimbo Fisher had a national championship.
Yeah.
Because Jameis Winston drove Florida State down the field. And suddenly, everybody's opinions were changed.
Funny thing about that is I didn't watch the first half of that game. I was following on Twitter, but I wasn't watching. And then, so I saw all of the rhetoric about, oh, Jameis Winston, this is the guy we gave the Heisman to? This is the guy that's so good? And then I turned on the game, and, you know, he had a fantastic second half. They had a great finish. It was a great game. And I just wanted to be like, how many of you are going back and deleting your tweets right now of
right,
all this reaction?
You know, and so I think, you know, listen, that's a total change of opinion inside of 4 hours.
Right.
You know, so the idea that you can have a total change of opinion inside of a week or 2 weeks or 2 months or 4 months, like, it's just silly. So, I see fewer and fewer anti-Andrew Wiggins tweets today than I saw, say, you know, a month ago. Why? Because he just put 19 and 17 in a, you know, got 19 points, 17 rebounds in a win at, or no, 17 points, 19 rebounds in a win at Iowa State. He's averaging like 24 and, you know, 14 in his past two games. Listen, I'll bottom line it for you. If he goes two, that's reasonable. He might even go three, although I doubt it. But when I talk to NBA people and I ask for what's the floor on Andrew Wiggins? I know what the ceiling is. What's the floor? They tell me the floor is number two. Like, the worst, like, the idea that this guy was ever going to fall far is just crazy. There's too much there to work with. And you know as well as I do, NBA people are way more intrigued by the potential than they are by the actual product that is presented at the age of 18.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of coaches would say, and I know Rick Adelman has said this, he said potential gets coaches fired, but potential also gets GMs extended. I mean,
it's why Paul George went where he went in the NBA draft. You know, Paul George was I don't want to say a bad college basketball player, but he was an irrelevant college basketball
right.
player on a bad team. And yet people looked at him and they saw all this stuff. Now, I didn't think he's going to be this, but somebody thought he had the potential to be this, and that's why you take him. It's why, you know, many, many years ago, what was the big debate that maybe after Emeka Okafor won a national championship at UConn, and did Dwight Howard go ahead of him? Was that the same draft? I think it was the same
yeah,
draft.
Yeah, it was Orlando had to pick between him and between Dwight and Okafor.
Yeah, and so, yeah, and I just remember people going, my, you know, because, you know, Emeka's coming off a national championship. He's been high profile. And people were saying, how could you take a high school kid over this college polished big man who, you know, just won a title and cut nets and blah, 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 because of what we imagined Dwight Howard could be.
Right.
And now that was a legitimate debate back then. Now you throw that same debate out today, it seems silly, right? It's because, you know, in the NBA draft, you're going to look at potential. And when you're looking at potential, Wiggins, Embiid, and then I think Parker is right there with them, but maybe slightly behind. Those are the three guys with the highest ceilings, I think.
Embiid's stock has just had this meteoric rise. That is just, I mean, it makes sense, and it's impressive. You look at it, I mean, what is he, 7 feet, 7'5", wingspan, just incredibly athletic and nimble. And his numbers are, I mean, you look at him, and it's like, oh, he's putting up almost 11 points a game and, you know, 7.5 rebounds a game, almost 2.6 blocks. And then you look, he's only playing 21 minutes. I mean, he just puts up these incredible stats. He's hitting 67% of his, I don't know, shots around the rim, I guess. I don't know if you can say shots total because he's not really, it's not like he's taking face-up jumpers or anything, but he does seem really skilled. His passing ability has impressed me. The rise in his stock makes a ton of sense.
You know, I went to Lawrence, Kansas in the preseason, honestly, to do a piece on Andrew Wiggins, and I spent a day with Andrew Wiggins, and I then went to a Kansas workout. Now, they weren't doing much. It was a lot of skill stuff and defensive stuff. But afterwards, Joel Embiid, you know, basically hung around and worked out with a manager. And I watched it with the Kansas staff. And they didn't say this to me, but I got the sense that they were more excited about the potential of Joel Embiid than they were Andrew Wiggins. Again, this is not their words, but exactly. But, you know, how sometimes people will imply things.
Sure.
They seem to imply that, I know, Gary, you're here to see Andrew, but this is the dude. This is the guy. And it doesn't necessarily mean he'll be our best player this year, but if you're looking up in 10 years and who's had the better NBA career, like, this might be the guy instead of Andrew Wiggins. Now, Rick Pitino said in the summer he thought that Wiggins and Embiid would go 1 and 2 in the NBA draft in some order.
Wow.
And now, so Rick was really ahead of the game on this. But I came back from Kansas, you know, and you know, if you are really, really, really bored, you can go back and find a tweet that I sent from that trip, and I basically said, you know, Kansas fans, listen, after watching it, you're going to love Joel Embiid. Like, this, he's way better. I knew he was good. He's way better than I thought. And what I was amazed by on some level is that his story is a pretty typical story. He's from Cameroon, you know, imported, for lack of a better word, into the United States. Had never really played basketball. All right, so there's like hundreds of kids like that.
Yeah,
he's only been playing basketball for like literally 3 years, and so I've been around, you know, African-born players who come to the United States and are learning the game, and they're always here for the same reasons, because they're 6'11", they're 7 feet, and they can block shots, and they got athleticism, and the truth is, I've talked to college basketball coaches about this. You know, they'll tell you, listen, you get two of them in your program, you hope one of them pans out. You know, you get four of them over a four-year span, you hope one of them pans out. They're not all going to, but they all, or almost all, they look the same. They're very mechanical. You can see some raw stuff there, but often the game's just too fast for them.
Right.
And they're just terrible offensively. They can do nothing but tip dunk and dunk, period. This kid is like another level. If you watched him, you know, just do a shooting drill, and I'm talking from 22 feet, you would never think that he just picked up a basketball 3 years ago. It looks like, I mean, I don't want to say he has a perfect shooting motion, because I'm not a shooting coach, but to my eyes, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, he's very fluid. And then his footwork, which you know, everybody's seen at this point, it's just way, way advanced for somebody, A, his age, but also somebody who's so inexperienced in the sport. You know, typically, a kid with his, I don't know, birth certificate would be a presence defensively, but a mess offensively. And the truth is, he's probably better offensively than he is defensively,
yeah.
And he's really good defensively. And so, I don't want to contradict myself. Give me the first pick today, I'm taking Andrew Wiggins. But I would hate to have to be the guy who passed on Joel Embiid, because I reject the comparison of Hakeem Olajuwon, just because, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, like, although I will tell you, the Kansas staff, like, brought him up. In fact, they were joking with Joel when I was there. They were like, hey, show Parrish some of that dream stuff. Show him the dream shake, you know. And he would mess around and do a little bit of that stuff, and they were laughing. So he will tell you that he's watched a ton of YouTube videos of Olajuwon and to try to learn how he plays. Now, I think that's an unfair comparison, just because, you know, if you remove Michael Jordan from Earth, like Hakeem Olajuwon would be in the conversation for, you know, best player of all time. Like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. Phenomenal. Yeah.
Like I had not seen Olajuwon in many, many years, right? Until I was in Kansas, after watching Embiid and after hearing what the Kansas coach said, and I got back to my hotel and I went to YouTube and I was like, geez, Olajuwon was great. Like, could you just don't see Biggs do the stuff that he did today?
No, I mean, he was essentially, in a way, he was Kevin Durantish as a big man.
Oh, it was unbelievable, yeah. Right? Unbelievable the way he played. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if that's where you're setting the bar, that seems grossly unfair. It's a little bit like setting the Kevin Durant bar for Andrew Wiggins.
Right.
But I understand why people say that. And I had another guy throw out the other day to me this comparison. You know, a better shot blocking defensive presence, Pau Gasol.
Oh, you know, I like that.
I don't mind. I like that too. You know, because he's somebody that you can throw the ball to. There aren't many 18-year-old Africans that you can throw the ball to, and he's won quite clearly already. There's no reason to think he's not going to get better. I cannot think more of him.
Well, I've got to admit, I was never that huge on him, and now I'm kind of buying into the downgrading of his game. But what is it about Julius Randle that just isn't blowing people away?
I think he's so physically overwhelming. He's a bit of a bully. In fact, that's the word, and I don't mean that in a bad way, like he's out there taking cheap shots and, you know, harassing, you know, nerds. I mean that but that is the word that NBA scouts have used with, you know, about him with me. He bullies people.
Yeah.
You know, there was a play last night, you know, in the second half of the game against Arkansas. He caught the ball around free throw line, and there was no lane there, right? There were three Arkansas players there. There was really nowhere to go. Any other player passes out of that. And he just sort of, I don't want to say lowered his shoulder because that would be an offensive foul, but somehow he got from that point to the rim, right? And that's not something you're going to be able to do in the NBA. You're not going to be able to overwhelm people physically. You're not, at least he's not, right?
Right.
You're not going to be able to just push people around. He gets in college basketball, and frankly his entire life, he's been able to get wherever he wants to go. Like, he gets the ball. There was a play when I was at the Champions Classic in Chicago very early on. He was playing against Michigan State. He caught the ball on the right wing, probably, I don't know, 12 feet out. And as he caught it, if you pause it right there, there's nowhere for him to go. And I actually was sitting next to Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports, and I said they got him the ball too far away from the basket. And before I could even complete that sentence, he was at the rim. And it was because he just overpowered everybody, just pushed through everybody. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about potential again, you go Andrew Wiggins. Okay, what's the potential? What's the ceiling? Maybe it's something like Tracy McGrady. And I know that might sound silly to some people, but Tracy McGrady was awesome.
Yeah. You
know, just on bad teams, Tracy McGrady was awesome.
Yeah.
So maybe his ceiling's Tracy McGrady. And Joel Embiid, let's say maybe his ceiling is, I don't know, let's just dream. Let's say it is Olajuwon or a lesser version of Olajuwon, but still an all-star, you know, top 2-3 big man in the country.
Sure.
And Jabari is a pro shot maker already. You know, you could see some, you know, I think maybe a Carmelo, but without all the things that people hate about Carmelo.
Right. Right.
You know, and then you go, okay, what could Julius Randle be? What's his ceiling? And, you know, I don't like to put ceilings on 18-year-olds, because if you'd asked me once upon a time about Steph Curry's ceiling, I'd have probably told you it's lower than this, or Roy Hibbert's ceiling, I'd have probably told you it's lower than this. So, you know, we can be wrong about this stuff, but as long as we're having the conversation, like, can he be Zach Randolph?
You know, that's what I was just going to ask you, is because he is such a bully.
Like Zach Randolph without the baggage that Zach had early in his career. And I think that's fair. And so let's say that everybody then reaches their potential. You know, would you rather have a lesser version of Akeem or a Tracy McGrady? And now, I live in Memphis. I love Z-Bo. But, you know, he's a two-time All-Star. You know, it's not like he's, you know, he's a Hall of Famer or anything like that. So I think, quite simply, Julius's ceiling is just a tad lower than the other guys. And now, he might be safer than the other guys because he's going to be able to do – he's going to rebound at the pro level. And he's going to get, you know, putbacks and that kind of stuff at the pro level. But can he ever be a true superstar at the pro level? I'm not sure about that. I'm not ready to eliminate it. But again, if we're dreaming that everybody becomes what they have the potential to become, I think his ceiling's a little lower than the other guys.
And that's the thing, probably in any other draft. I mean, if for some reason Julius Randle is a year ahead and he's in last year's draft, love him, right?
You take him one, you wouldn't even have to think about it.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Honestly, I think really any of the top seven in this draft, you know, if you go the Parker, Embiid, Wiggins, Randle, Marcus Smart, Aaron Gordon, Dante Exum, seven guys, I think you could take any of those seven, put them in last year's draft, and they all go number one.
Yeah.
You know, I think picking seventh in this draft is the equivalent of picking one in last year's draft. And when you look at what Anthony Bennett's actually doing, which is historically terrible,
right.
I think it becomes not even a debate. So this is a deep draft at the top. I'm hesitant to say, because, you know, I get these questions every once in a while. They go, okay, people are comparing this draft to the 2003 draft, which is fine, whatever. And they go, you know, so do you think it's going to be like that one? Well, I don't know that you can get LeBron James in this draft, you know?
Right.
And I don't know that you can get a Kevin Durant in this draft or somebody like that. Like, I don't know if you can get a genuine top three or four player in the NBA in this draft, but there's going to be multiple time All-Stars in this draft, and I think any of the top seven could maybe, you know, fall into that category.
So if you're a GM and you need a guard, you need a lead guard for your team, are you taking Marcus Smart or are you taking Dante Exum? Because Exum's biggest thing going for him right now seems to be the mystery around his game. We don't really know. There's not a lot of film on him. There's not a lot going on. You know, stuff gets leaked here and there of these great plays, but there's just not a lot there. And then Marcus Smart, his decision not to go in the draft last year seemed like this huge mistake, and now it doesn't really seem like it's affecting his draft status all that much. I mean, you know, maybe he kills in workouts last year and becomes the number one pick, but maybe he's just a top five pick because there was so much uncertainty in last year's draft. And so now, you know, which one would you rather have? Would you rather have the guy who has maybe higher potential with Exum, or would you rather have Marcus Smart, who just seems like, you know, he is what he is, and that's a damn good player to have at the next level?
Exum is going to be the most fascinating guy in this draft, because by the time we get to June, we're going to know, or at least we're going to think we know what we get with Andrew Wiggins, and we're going to think we know what we get with Jabari and Joel and Julius Randle and Marcus Smart. Exum, I think it's honestly the best thing going for him, which is he's got this great reputation right now, and now it's just sort of cemented in place. You know, it's not, you know, maybe some guys could pass him in theory, but he's not going to fall far because people are intrigued by what they've seen, even if what they've seen isn't very much. And so, you know, with Marcus Smart, like, financially it was a mistake to return to school.
Sure.
I was told he would go no lower than second last year and could have theoretically gone number one. But, you know, I've talked to Marcus about this, and I thought he gave a remarkably mature answer for somebody his age. And the answer was this: I might have lost $5 million or $10 million coming back to school, you know, because I could have gone one in last year's draft, and I probably won't go higher than, you know, the 4, 5, 6, 7 in this year's draft. And he said, listen, I'm very aware of that. Everybody made me aware of that. My parents, my coaches, you know, different agents. Like, I'm very aware of what I left on the table. He said, but I'm going to make $50 million playing this game at least. You know, I just am. And you know, barring some sort of crazy injury, and A, most people don't suffer crazy injuries, and
right.
B, even if I do, like, let's say I tear an ACL, like Nerlens Noel. Well, Nerlens still went top 10.
Right.
You know, like a torn ACL at this point, which is considered the devastating injury, right, in basketball. Like, if you get an ACL tear, like, that's as bad as it gets, right? Or, you know, barring something crazy, like, you know, you run into a wall and you break your neck and
right.
suffer paralysis, you know, which is something we've never seen. I'm just making things up at this point. You know, a torn ACL is like, that's considered, oh my God, he tore his ACL. Like, a torn ACL doesn't eliminate you from being drafted where you ought to be drafted. It just doesn't. You know, Kenyon Martin broke his leg in half and was still the number one pick in the draft. So Marcus said, listen, like, if I suffer an injury, statistically it's improbable, but if I suffer an injury, where am I going to get drafted? It's still a lottery. And then I have enough confidence in my own ability, my work ethic, in my on-the-court skills, in my off-the-court behavior, that I'm going to be on an NBA roster for a long time. So I'm going to be a millionaire forever. And so, yeah, I could have $3 million in the bank right now, I guess, and nice house and nice cars, but I like where I'm at. You know, I live with my best friend. You know, I'm a star of college basketball. I enjoy being a college student. I enjoy being a kid. And what kind of value do you put on that? If you're going to make $100 million in your life, is it worth $5 million for the memories that I'm creating? Ask Carmelo if he would take an extra $5 million to, but he's got to give back that freshman year of college. Then he's got to give back that national championship. And I just thought that was, listen, I get, then I could take my, you know, I could take mine or anybody else's financial advisors, and they would go and tell them the same story, and they'd go, well, the kid's stupid. Like, I got that, right?
Yeah.
But I, you know, if it's hard to argue with that, you know, like, if that's your point of view, and that's your vision of life, like, listen, I'm living with my best friend, having the time of my life, and maybe, you know, becoming an icon at my school, and possibly going to a Final Four and creating all of these great moments. Like, if I'm going to make $100 million anyway, and keep in mind, like, even the bust in the NBA, who are, like, top five pick, like Kwame Brown, like, he's made $70 million.
Right.
Like, you know, these guys, they don't, you know, once you're that kind of prospect, you're not poor, unless you just blow all your money. But, you know, if you'll make money, I guess is what I'm saying, and it's what Marcus Smart was saying. So I just walked away from that conversation with Marcus going, you know what, if it were my son, I would have said we're turning pro. If it were me, I would have said we're turning pro. If it were my nephew or you know, my brother, I'd have said we're turning pro. But I can't argue with a kid who puts value on something other than money. On some level, it's refreshing. So I don't – and then he's come back and he's been – you know, he's just a better player. Now, he could be a better player and go farther down in the draft, in this year's draft, because of the quality – at the top. But I guess, you know, to wrap it all back around and answer your initial question, I don't know enough about Exum to feel confident in that pick. I know what I'm getting with Marcus Smart. Like, he's a top-tier competitor. All the intangibles are there. When you talk to, forget just his coach, Travis Ford, but every coach who's ever been around him. You know, Billy Donovan, Mark Few, Shaka Smart, they worked with him for 2 years straight, USA Basketball. They all swear by him. Billy Donovan and Mark Few and Shaka Smart, all in separate conversations, told me he's the best leader and best competitor they've ever been around.
Wow.
And Billy's including his Florida teams. Mark's including his Gonzaga teams. And Shaka's including everybody he's been around. You know, Ed stops at Clemson, Florida as assistants, and then at VCU. So, you know, when you got those type of guys vouching for Marcus Smart, you know the physical tools are mostly there, though we could use a better jumper. But all of the intangibles that seem so important in this era of professional basketball, like, they are there and they are off the charts. And so I think Exum might have a higher ceiling, although you would know that better than I would. I love Marcus Smart. I don't think there's any way you ever regret having Marcus Smart on your basketball team.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know, because I've barely seen Exum play. I mean, I've seen some highlights here and there, but then I look at the competition. It looks like Al Jefferson's high school tapes of just these overmatched children that he's going against. And it's like, well, yeah, he looks great, but where's the competition? I mean, I'm sure there is film of great competition that he's going up against and he's doing well, but I don't feel like I've seen a whole lot.
Yeah, and that's a problem. It's a little bit, it goes back to the days before we had you know, 1 year in college before you can enter the draft rule, which is, you know, you would see, you know, these high school players, and every once in a while it would be a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant, and it seemed undeniable. Like, you could see that stuff.
Sure.
But there were a few times where you have to gauge, you know, is this truly an NBA talent, or is this just a guy overwhelming inferior competition? In most cases, let's be fair, the NBA people were right. You know, the safest thing you could do in those years, which was basically a decade, starting with Kevin Garnett to when, you know, high school seniors were no longer allowed to enter the draft, about the safest thing you could do is take best high school player available, right?
Right.
You go back and look it up. Like, I've done the research on it. If you simply, I did it because I live in Memphis and the Grizzlies were terrible for so long, I once upon a time did a project where I said, if the Grizzlies would have merely walked to the podium every single time it was their turn to pick in a draft and said, we take best high school player available, they would have had like four all-stars or all-stars on the team. Like, it would have been a championship level roster.
Right.
And so more often than not, the NBA people guessed right. So perhaps they're good at this, at gauging what somebody is, even when they're playing against inferior competition. But certainly you'll have a better grasp of what these college guys are after 32, 35, 40 games. against, you know, for the most part, legitimate competition than you will Dante Exum.
No, I completely agree. And I don't know, maybe Exum is better. That's the problem. It's like I don't have a hot sports take on it because I haven't seen him play against competition enough.
You're exactly right. And I recognize, like, on Twitter and leading into the draft, you're going to read these things and hear podcasts like this where people are going, Dante Exum is a fraud, or Marcus Smart can't play at the NBA. You know, it's just better if you have these extreme opinions.
Right.
You know, Andrew Wiggins is going to be, you know, a top 10 player of all time, or Andrew Wiggins will never be in the league when he's 25.
Right.
You know, let's debate it. I just think that's silly. You know, the truth is, I think it's fine to sometimes say you don't know. And when it comes to Dante Exum, like, I just don't know. I people who opinion I respect, who have seen him, you know, in person and more often than I am, more often than not, they like him. They
yeah.
really like him.
Yeah.
But I have not seen him enough to know that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Two guys that I was really high on Wayne Selden going into the season. Just loved everything about his game and didn't really know a ton about James Young. And I feel like at the beginning of the season, you know, I know Coach Calipari told you, you know, James Young is the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's maybe our best prospect. And I think that going in, like, a lot of people would say, oh, Selden's much better than Young. But now, you know, you've got them 15, 16 in your big board. And I don't know, like, Selden's been good. I've been happy with what I've seen out of him. But I don't know that I could argue anymore that, oh, yeah, you got to take Selden over James Young.
Yeah, no, I don't think you have to. Like, it's certainly subjective and up for debate. I guess with Selden, I would say, you know, freshmen, and this is actually something that I think, you know, maybe enhances, you know, Andrew Wiggins at this point, is that you go back and look at, you know, Bill Self is a future Hall of Fame coach. He never has bad teams. He's won, you know, 9 straight Big 12 championships, or at least a share of them. He's terrific. Go back and look at how many freshmen have been really good for him.
Yeah.
But there's not many.
Not
like,
a lot.
You know, there's not a lot. Like, Darrell Arthur was pretty good, you know, but, like, freshmen aren't typically, like, great for Bill Self. They just aren't. That's why, you know, I would never question anybody going to Kansas because it's Kansas, you know, and because it's Bill Self who has a great reputation as a coach and clearly has some guys who have become, you know, really good pros. But you know, if you project yourself as a one-and-done guy, there's examples of that's a little more difficult to do at Kansas, perhaps, than it is at other places. So, you know, maybe I'm not as surprised that Selden isn't off the charts. Now, he's been better recently, but, you know, I think there's also something to be said for, you know, he's playing beside Andrew Wiggins. He's playing beside Perry Ellis, who is a terrific college player. Certainly his ceiling's much lower as a pro, but I think he is a pro.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Joel Embiid, who's a pro big, top 5 big, and then you've got a point guard who's, you know, all these guys aren't playing with a great point guard. And so sort of the way we saw Trey Burke last year make everybody probably look a little better than they were at Michigan, whether it's Mitch McGarry or Glenn Robinson, you know, Wiggins and Embiid and Selden, they don't have a point guard that can make them look better. They don't even have a point guard, really, who gets them in good spots to make, you know, to make basketball plays. And so I'm not as down on Selden as maybe some people. If you wanted to take Young ahead of him, certainly that's fine with me. But I think he's still, you know, a borderline lottery guy. With James Young, it's interesting. You mentioned when I was with Cal in the preseason, and he said, listen, when NBA scouts come by and we work out, they say, James Young is your best pro prospect. And, you know, I've known Cal for so long that I understand sort of his motives behind certain
sure.
things he says.
Yeah.
So, you know, my initial reaction to that was, okay, first off, that's crazy because you have Julius Randle. You know, nobody would argue James Young is a better pro prospect than Julius Randle. So I honestly don't even believe that anybody ever said James Young is the best pro prospect. Like, I don't think those words came out of any scout's mouth. But then my second reaction was, I know why he's doing this, though. And it's because, I think at the time, he was planning on starting a lineup of the Harrison twins plus Alex Poitras plus Julius Randle plus Willie Cauley-Stein, which means you had a McDonald's All-American and James Young coming off the bench, and his people could be upset about that. James could be upset about that. Again, I'm guessing. But typically, you know, if you're a McDonald's All-American, you don't want to come off the bench. And so is this Cal just sort of planning something in the media where he can go back and show James and go back and show James's family and say, listen, you don't have to start. NBA people, look, read this at CBSSports.com. NBA people are coming in to our practice. They see you. We didn't play the game. They don't care. They don't care whether you start or not.
Right.
Daniel Orton was a first round pick off of my bench. Nobody cares whether you're starting. They only care about if you're good. If you're good at their level. So look at this. They're saying you're our best pro prospect. So why does it matter to you whether you start or not?
Right.
And I honestly, God, believe that was at least rooted in that on some level. All of that said, I still don't think James Young is Kentucky's best NBA prospect. Like, I'm still not buying that. But he might be their second best. And at one point, he was considered their sixth or seventh. And, you know, he's just shown the ability. You know, he had a big shot last night to look like it was going to force a second overtime. Ended up not in a loss at Arkansas because Arkansas got a wild stick-back dunk at the buzzer. He hasn't made a great percentage of shots, but he does seem to be a great shooter. He's got decent size for that position. He's actually one of these guys that's better than I anticipated. Not the best prospect at Kentucky, but I think it's reasonable to conclude he might be the second best.
Is that because of his ability and his play, or is it maybe that Willie Cauley-Stein and the Harrison twins maybe haven't been as impressive as we expected?
You know what? Let me rephrase what I said. I think Willie Cauley-Stein's the second best. I love Willie Cauley-Stein, and he's not going to put up big numbers.
Yeah.
But that's because, you know, they don't run things for him. You know, if you're going to throw it to the post at Kentucky, you should be throwing it to Julius Randle, not Willie Cauley-Stein.
Right.
But I just think there's certain things he does that you know, it's a little bit of a cliche to say you can't teach, but it's true. You know, he's legit 7 foot. He's a terrific athlete. He's a great instincts, shot blocker, all of that stuff. And he's only going to become more developed offensively. So I would actually put James behind Willie Cauley-Stein. And, like, I have Willie Cauley-Stein going eighth right now. And every once in a while I'll get some pushback on that. But I think he's an undeniable lottery pick. You just get him and you go, okay, we know a couple of things he's going to be able to do well. He's going to be able to block shots. He's going to be able to run the floor. Can he do anything else when he's 21, 22, 23, 26? Because if he can, we got something really special. So I would actually, you know, rephrase it, reorder it, put James behind Willie Cauley-Stein. But you know, those top three, and then you throw in the Harrisons, and I'm not actually sure that Andrew is better than Aaron, although that's always been the opinion. You know, Kentucky could theoretically have five top 20 picks, five top 25 picks. I mean, it's, you know, they've got a loaded roster. It's why still, you know, people are holding on to the chance that they, you know, they got the stuff to go win a national championship.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, the Harrison twins are weird because before the season it was, oh, Andrew's the guy. You know, he's a point guard. And you make a comment in your big board where you say, is he, you know, you ask, is he really a point guard or just a tall guy that brings the ball up? And I think that's a legitimate question because I haven't been blown away by his point guard skills in comparing the, you know, him to Aaron. You know, Aaron's the shooting guard, I guess, out of the family, but they both kind of look like shooting guards. And if you're talking shooting guards, I may like Aaron's ability a little bit more. You know, maybe he can't put the ball on the floor the same way, but, you know, I kind of feel better about him excelling at the shooting guard position than I do Andrew at the point guard position.
It's interesting. I had a coach ask me during the season. He said, why do you think Andrew Harrison's a point guard? And I said, and like, honestly, I didn't have a quick comeback. Because he plays point guard. He said, why do you play point guard? And before I could even answer, he said, Andrew and Aaron are twins. They played together forever, their entire lives. When they were six, they played together. When they were nine, they played together. They played together forever. Well, they can't play the same position, but they got to play.
Right.
They're both talented. So if you've got two twins who are, you know, so obviously and undeniably more talented than everybody else, you're going to put them on the court together. You just are. You're going to put them on the court together. So they're probably both shooting guards, but one handles the ball slightly better than the other one. So he became the point guard of the family. But is he really a point guard? Like, is he really, you know, a point guard in the traditional sense of the word? Or is he just the guy who has forever in that family been the dribbler? Is he just a tall dribbler? Or is he a point guard? And I say, yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And so I guess the good news is, you know, with the way the NBA game is today, you don't have to be a traditional point guard to play that position. But I think his stock has slipped. And again, it's all relative here. He's still a first-round pick.
Right.
But I think more and more people are noticing, you know, he doesn't have point guard instincts. Like, certainly he doesn't have point guard instincts. Like, he's, you know, his instincts are to get the ball and drive the ball on you and try to get to the rim and get fouled or lay it in or dunk. I mean, that's what he really is. He's not a like make everybody better a point guard. And so, I talked to the Kentucky staff in the preseason, and you know they like their team, they like all these guys, but the idea that there was a gap, this perceived gap between Aaron Harrison and Andrew Harrison, was just not something that they bought into after being around the kids for a couple of months. They think those guys are much closer in ability, both at this level and the next level, than probably most people realized before this season started.
You've been doing this much longer than I have in terms of draft coverage. Is there, just from my own personal experience this season, is there a college fan base angrier than the Syracuse Orangemen, or I'm sorry, the Syracuse Orange at this point, when you don't rank their guys higher than maybe you should?
Yeah, they get mad because, you know, C.J. Fair isn't in your lottery, you know, right. And I think some people, you know, have a hard time grasping that college greatness, and I think C.J. Fair is, I don't know if he's great, but, you know, he might be the ACC Player of the Year. He's really good. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know, when it comes to the next level. So C.J. Fair could be Syracuse's best player, and perhaps even the best player in the ACC, but not even be one of the top two pro prospects on the Syracuse roster. And so, no, I've got that pushback as well. But, you know, these are two, you know, completely different games. And I don't know that I realized it as much until I started alternating, you know, sometimes on a night-by-night basis between college games and NBA games. And I don't even watch it on television, but sitting courtside.
Yeah.
I will go to a University of Memphis game and sit in the exact same seat where I sit for a Grizzlies game. And you watch these two games. And they're under the same name in terms of sport. You know, it's called basketball both times. Going to a basketball game on a Wednesday night, going to a basketball game on a Thursday night. But you watch these games, they're not the same game.
It's not the same.
So the same stuff ain't happening out there. And it's not played the same way. The players are like, I'm not one of those guys that screams that, you know, how could you watch a college basketball game? The players just aren't as good. You know, and it's just such an inferior product to the pro because, you know, by that standard, you know, how could you watch college football? You know, there's no college football team that's as good as the worst NFL team. So if you're really just interested in seeing the very best of the very best, you know, play a particular game, then you should never watch college football. You should never watch college baseball, basketball. You should never watch college anything. But that said, it is undeniable when you watch. Like, it is, you know, there are so many shots you see missed at the college level that are just automatic at the pro level. You don't see pressing at the pro level because you'll just get torn up because
right.
There's too many guys on the court that can dribble the ball, that can, you know, pass the ball, and where in college there's just not. And so I think sometimes people just don't realize that, you know, the games are vastly different. And so what would C.J. Fair be great at the pro level? Like, Doug McDermott, I think, is interesting because he's going to be great at something at the pro level. Like, at the very least, he's a floor spacer. You know,
yeah, he could be a super, like a super Steve Novak or maybe a Rashard Lewis type,
you know,
or something like that.
Like, if he can't do anything else, he can do that.
Yeah.
And so at the NBA level, I don't want to say people are looking for specialists because you're not. You're looking for LeBron James or Kevin Durant. But you better have one thing that you do really, really well, like at a pro level.
Right.
Like, can you run a team really well? Can you guard the perimeter really well? Can you shoot corner threes really well? Can you rebound at an unbelievable level? Any of those types of things. Like, that's how you make millions of dollars. But to just be really good at a bunch of stuff, that ain't good enough. And C.J. Fair, you know, with all due respect to C.J. Fair, he's just really, really good at a whole bunch of stuff. But that's not necessarily the type of stuff that turns you into a lottery pick.
Yeah, I completely agree. Before I let you go, you've got a few guys at the end of your first round. You got T.J. Warren, Glenn Robinson III, Zach LaVine. Is it LaVine or LaVine?
It's Zach LaVine. But it's confusing.
I'm always off on that. Tyler Ennis and Mitch McGarry. Of those five guys, Warren, Robinson, LaVine, Ennis, McGarry, who's most likely to make a huge jump and maybe even approach the lottery?
Well, it's obviously not McGarry because he's not going to play again this year.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say he should have left.
And the back injury is going to scare.
Yeah. And so because that contradicts what I said about Marcus Smart. Mitch McGarry returned to school for the exact same reasons that Marcus Smart did.
Sure.
Unfortunately, what we're finding out is that Marcus Smart was great because of Marcus Smart, and that Mitch McGarry might have been great because of Trey Burke.
Right.
You know, like, I think Mitch McGarry's good regardless, but but did Trey Burke make Mitch McGarry in that tournament run look better than Mitch McGarry actually is? I think that's a very reasonable opinion. You combine that with the back problem, and you know as well as I do, like, you're almost better to have a broken ankle than you are a back problem, because problems, they don't go away.
You're probably better to have an ACL injury at this point, like you mentioned earlier.
You fix the ACL and you go play, you know, but like these back things, they often resurface. And so that, you know, he's got a bunch of stuff right now. My guess is he'll return to college and won't even be in this draft. I would say Zach LaVine's got the best chance. I'm not in love with him at this point as much as some people are, because, you know, some people see, you know, he's got great size for his position. He runs the court pretty well. And because of the way UCLA's playing this year under Steve Alford, he's getting a lot of run-out dunks, and they look spectacular.
Sure.
He is a great dunker. Like, if we're going to do a draft of dunkers, there's no question. Zach LaVine's got to be in that. He can make a three-point shot and could become a great shooter. I know statistically he's really good, but I don't know that he's a great shooter right now. I guess I just haven't seen enough yet to convince me that we're not watching somebody who's taken advantage of an up-tempo system that's way faster than even NBA teams would dare try to play, and you know that this isn't just a really mostly nice 15-game stretch for him. I'm a little hesitant to throw him in the lottery, but you know I could see how he could get there. I mean, you know, when you look at him and you see him run and jump, you know, again, some of that stuff that NBA scouts fall in love with, it's right there in front. It's not hard to see. So I don't have him in the lottery now, but I could see him getting there, certainly.
Do you think he's a point guard at the NBA level? Because I really think he's more of a shooting guard. I don't know that I've seen enough playmaking ability.
Yeah, I don't. Like, you know, UCLA has such a – like, they don't have a true point guard. You know, Kyle Anderson is basically playing point for them, and he has a unique skill set that I don't know how it's going to translate to the NBA level. He's really a – like, we always talk about, oh, this guy's unique. Like, Kyle Anderson is really unique. Like, it's very hard to even come up with a comparison for him. But I guess what I'm saying is, if Zach LaVine had point guard skills, you'd see him handle the ball a little bit more at UCLA than he does. And at this point, he really doesn't at all. Like, he's mostly the guy that is going to run off screens, try to catch and shoot, or you know, get out in transition and finish, you know, fast breaks. And guess what? Just those two things are good enough to get you in the NBA, but I'd be surprised if he's the point guard at the next level.
Well, I know I keep saying I'm going to let you go, but this just popped in my head. Kyle Anderson, Royce White, a fair comparison in terms of how he's used?
Yeah, minus all the stuff.
Minus all the distractions.
It's weird, and Kyle has always been like this. Like, when I saw him in the AAU circuit, like and when you see him in person, you'll notice this. He looks like he's moving in slow motion. Like, there's nothing quick about him. Like, you know, when you look at some other big ball handlers from, you know, whether it's Royce or you know, even going way back to Penny Hardaway and that kind of stuff. Because anytime you get a tall guy who can really pass it, people bring out Penny. Well, those guys had, you know, Penny was a terrific athlete. Kyle Anderson's not an athlete. He's just a tall guy who can shoot it a little bit, who really has great vision, who can handle it. He moves in slow motion. You have no idea how he gets by people, but he does consistently. He just... I don't know if he lulls them to sleep, and I don't know if it'll work at the NBA level, but it's worked at the high school level, which doesn't mean anything. But it's also working at the college level, and so I guess what I'm saying is, at the high school level, I didn't understand how he got by people. At the college level, I have no idea how he gets by people. So at the pro level, I guess theoretically he could also get by people, but that's the obvious question mark with him. Is he a good enough athlete to, you know, to take advantage of his skill set in the NBA? I'm not sure. That's why he's going to be a big question mark in this draft, because there's some stuff there that you really love, but he's just so slow with everything that he does that it's a weird thing to watch when you then try to translate it to the NBA level.
Well, Gary, I really appreciate your time. We can read you on CBSSports.com, catch you on the GP Show, 92.9 FM in Memphis. Enjoy your sleep, enjoy your quiet time, and start feeling less flu-like.
I'm going to do my best. I appreciate it, Zach. It was fun.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.